We are getting ready for Purim, which, please God, we're going to observe this week on Thursday evening and Friday. It's slightly unusual. Usually, Purim is not on Erev Shabbos, the day of Friday, so it makes it a little bit unusual. But we're thinking about Purim and to consider an important aspect, a dimension of Purim that is a key way of thinking about life from a Jewish perspective, is something that can inform us generally and, of course, be relevant to the work that you do in the museum, but not exclusively. So we're going to focus on one aspect of Purim, which hopefully you can apply in all aspects of, you know, thinking about life. So the challenge that we face in life and that has troubled philosophers and thinkers and thoughtful and sensitive people from time immemorial is the problem of evil. And we're not going to think about this problem from a philosophical standpoint, because there's a lot to say about that too. But I want to think about it from the standpoint of how we react and how we think about it. Not so much justifying it, where does it come from, theodicy, those are all important things. But how do we confront evil? What does it mean to contend with evil? And I bring this up today because so much of the Purim story is about this issue, is about confronting evil. Right? Many of you are familiar with the story. You have a plot in which one individual sets out to eradicate, to annihilate the entire Jewish people. And this person, this individual, his name is Haman or Haman. And by the way, you're all muted, so even if you started banging now, I wouldn't hear you, but that's okay. You can bang if you want. Haman sets out to kill all the Jews. But Haman, according to the tradition, according to the rabbinate, because he is referred to in the Megillah as Haman Ha'agagi, that he is a descendant of Agag, that means he is a descendant of a tribe called Amalek. Amalek is a specific nomadic tribe that appears in the Chumash in the Bible several times. And there is a lot that we focus on in terms of thinking about how we address Amalek. And so this is really an opportune time to think about what are the models and the approaches that we think about how we deal with evil. And one thing which is very interesting is that in Judaism, we don't deny evil. That's the first thing. We don't pretend that it doesn't exist. We hold it up and we confront it. You know, there's a practice that some people have, that I do this sometimes if I have time in the morning, that after davening, after having our tefillah, our prayers in the morning, there are seven remembrances, seven reminders that people sometimes say. Sheish zechiros, the six reminders. And what are these six reminders? One of them reminds us about the revelation of Sinai. One of them reminds us about the upcoming Sabbath. Lots of important reminders, things that the Torah tells us to remember. Well, do you know that one of the things that the Torah tells us to remember, which if you look in the prayer book after the morning davening appears in many prayer books, is one of the six reminders, is the reminder to not forget in the passive and to proactively remember what Amalek, what that evil did to us, and we should never forget that. We don't move on from evil. We don't pretend like it doesn't exist, that it's a passing phase. We remember evil on a constant basis, which is important, because we don't throw it under the rug. Many of us have been to the synagogue for Torah reading on Shabbos. That Torah reading, which is important and beautiful, is not a biblical requirement. However, once a year, every year, there is one biblical Torah reading, which took place this past Shabbos, this past Saturday morning. Obviously, it's much more complicated now because of COVID, but even though, let's say in our house, I've been going with my kids to shul on Shabbos morning, Nechama has been definitely enjoying the opportunity to stay home on Shabbos. So it's been sub-zero, not a problem, but not this past Shabbos. Even though women are not obligated, she has the practice that generally she will go to shul on the Shabbos of what we call Parshas Zachor, the portion of remember. Remember what? Remember the story of Amalek. Amalek was this tribe that attacked the Jewish people in the desert for no reason, or as my kids would say, for no absolute reason. Vayizanevbacha, the Pasuk says, that they ambushed us, the weakest of the people. And God says, you have to remember that. It appears in two places in the Chumash. First, it appears in the context, in the episode, in the end of Parshas B'Shalach, in that portion. But the specific reading takes place in Parshas Kisetze, way at the end of the five books, which is what we read every year right before Purim. Why do we read it before Purim? For exactly this reason, because Purim is about remembering and identifying and calling out evil, which is associated with the personification of Amalek, and that's why we read it always right before Purim. It's referred to as Parsha Zachar. If you missed Parsha Zachar, if you missed that portion, so many suggest that you can make it up, so to speak, with the reading of the other, of the narrative description of the story of the attack of Amalek on the morning of Purim, which this year will be Friday morning. I think that's the first thing. That we don't pretend that evil doesn't exist. We don't ignore it. We don't move on from it. We are constantly aware of the presence and the potential danger of evil in the world. So then we have to ask ourselves, now that we understand that it exists, where does it come from and what do we do about it? So one way of thinking about this is to go back to the origins, so to speak, of evil. This idea of evil being synonymous with Amalek, with this particular cruel nation that for no reason attacked us in the desert, there is a verse that brings us to one point, which is very significant. The pasuk says, the verse says, Reishis goyim Amalek. Amalek is Reishis. What does Reishis mean in English? Anybody know? Reishit? Right, Cecilia, it's the first. It's at the beginning. It means that the potential for evil existed way at the beginning. And just like the word reishit, reishis, is associated with the Jewish people, the first word in the Torah is bereishis. Right? And Rashi there, in the famous Rashi commentary on the bottom of the Chumash, Rashi says, Reishis, that refers to the Jewish people. But there were two Reishises. There were two firsts. There was the Jewish people, the concept of good, and there was the concept of Amalek, which was also a Reishis. How did that happen at the beginning? Well, the truth is, if we think about it, it actually makes a lot of sense. Because let's go back way back to the beginning, when God created the world. How could God create a world if God is endless light? Everything is full of endless light. So if God is everything, so where is there space for us? How do we exist? How does the world exist? So there is a Kabbalistic teaching. I don't know anything about Kabbalah, but it's been translated into more average everyday parlance that even a person like you or me could understand. It's very much developed in the world of Chassidut, in Chassidus, that God had to create a space for us. That idea, it's very radical, is that God, imagine a bubble. God created a bubble and sucked the light out of that bubble. He created a vacuous area for people, for the world to exist. Because if there was just endless light, there wouldn't be room for us. So God created a space for us to exist. And now we understand what our job is in the world. God is perfect, but he said, you know what? We're going to create an opportunity to create perfection. God is endless light, but we're going to create a vacuum so someone can bring light into it. So what is our job in life? It's to bring the light of God into the world. We have a little bubble. It's a vacuum. And each one of us is bringing God's light into the world. That's why God created the world in the first place, right? To give us the opportunity to bring light into the world. I'm going to pause just for a moment for station identification to get some feedback on this to make sure this point, which is very important, is something that everybody gets. Questions, comments, or observations on what is a very deep idea. In Hebrew, it's called tzimtzum, that God, so to speak, minimized. He withdrew his endless light to create space for something else, for the existence of humanity, for our world. Questions, comments, or observations? No questions, good. It happens to be a very complicated Kabbalistic idea. I don't really understand it myself, but if everybody else is good with it, so we'll just go on. We'll pretend like we know. Okay. So now we understand immediately how there is the potential for evil. Because the moment that Hashem, that God created this vacuum, this bubble for us, the moment that there is that vacuum, there is the potential either to bring God into the world or to deny God or to reject God. By creating that space, by creating the vacuum, the potential exists for something to be dark. Before that, there was only light. But when God created that space, now there's a place for darkness and light. That's perhaps what it means, that Amalek is the first, meaning when God was creating the world, he created the potential for light and the potential for darkness. And that's how, when Adam had a choice, he fell. He didn't make the right choice. But the potential was there to have that choice. Whenever you have tzimtzum, whenever you have limitation, there is the potential for a mistake. There is the potential for darkness. Okay? So that's the first level of understanding. But I think there's a deeper way of really thinking about this, which is, if what we're saying is that when God created the world, he created the potential for light for us to do good, but also potential for darkness, for evil, by giving us that space. It's our space to do with it what we choose. There's another way of looking at this in the following sense. What was the energy with which God created the world? What is the message? What is the character, the trait, the quality that God used to create the world? What is the source of everything? It comes back to one point, the Reishis, the beginning. So there was a great rabbinic luminary, the 20th century, who had a great observation. And he says that the original koach, the source of everything to create the world, why did God create the world? Because he wanted to give us space. He wanted to give us an opportunity to bring light into the world, to raise our souls by bringing light. That is the koach, that is the power of giving. Light, creation, the divine spark is associated with giving. So what is going to be the antithesis of giving? What is the opposite? What is the koach? The power, what is that? Oh, Cecilia, you're telling us. You have to unmute. There we go. That's right, taking. If we go back to the original source of the world, God created this vacuum, and by creating the vacuum, he gave us an opportunity. He injected the concept of altruism, of giving, of generosity into existence. But because there was a vacuum, even though he gave and modeled giving and poured a light of giving into the world, but in that vacuum, there was also the potential for taking. When you give, you bring the light of God into the world, the same light that God used to create existence. That's why the verse says in Tehillim, Olam, the world, chesed yibaneh, is built on kindness, meaning the power of giving. That light of giving is the original divine light. What's the original challenge to that light? It's the darkness. It's the taking. There was a lawyer. He lived in Tel Aviv. A really interesting guy. His name was Avraham Korman. And he actually wrote many scholarly Torah books. And in one of them, he makes a very interesting observation that I never noticed until he pointed this out. Amalek, this personification of evil, they are found in the Chumash residing in very unusual ways. They don't have a land. If you notice, first in the book of Bereishis, they're living near, in Israel, they're living near Abraham. But then, when the Jews leave Egypt in the book of Shemos, they're in the Sinai Desert. And then, when you get later into the book of the Judges, where there's a whole discussion about, and then later in the time of Samuel, they're living in lots of different places. So Abraham Korman points out, he says, you know, Amalek didn't have a land. They were a band of nomadic terrorists, and they lived off of whomever they could attack, whomever they could take advantage of, whatever they could take and grab from others. They didn't have a land that they cultivated and nurtured and contributed to society. They were the epitome of takers, which is why, if we put it all together, we understand that that original source of darkness in the world, the source of taking, is connected to Amalek, which is this personification of only taking and never giving, never contributing, never bringing light, only bringing darkness. It's that power to take. What did the original snake, the Nachash HaKadmoni, say to Adam HaRishon, to the first man? He said, you see that fruit? Take it. Everything in life is about taking. It's grabbing. What can you grab? What can you take? Interesting. It's all about what can I take. Adam had, I don't know, imagine he had the Chicago, the Garfield Park Conservatory. You see how many trees are in that place? You know how many trees he must have had? How many fruits? He had every kumquat and every apple and everything. But there was one tree that he couldn't take, that he couldn't eat. And what did the snake, the koach, the power of darkness say to him? You have to take that last tree because you have to take everything. Interesting. There's a guy who everybody in the kingdom will bow to him. Everyone bows to him except one guy. And what? It drives him nuts. He can't handle it. Because Haman, who is the descendant of Amalek, is the personification of taking, of selfishness, of grabbing. And that koach, in its most unbridled form, it won't allow anything that it can't take. It takes everything. So Haman, when the Talmud in Maseches Chulin says, where do you find a hint for Haman in the Torah? It says the word Haman, hey, mem, nun, is the same word as hamin, from the tree. Hamin ha'etz. Evil is all about taking. It's about abusing. And it takes many forms, God forbid. You know, I mean, we've seen it in its worst, its absolute worst, most depraved, when human beings took others, they destroyed their lives, they took countries, they took, right? Look at the whole narrative, the arc of the Holocaust. It started with taking away people's rights, taking away their jobs. Then it became taking other countries' land, taking them into servitude, ultimately taking lives, destroying them. It was all, this is the shorish of Amalek. It's the incessant power of darkness of taking. And so every year we stand up as Jews and we say, this is a potential. It's a danger. It's lurking. Amalek the capacity for destruction, for destructiveness, which was rooted in the original creation where there was an element of a vacuum, an element that somebody could choose to take rather than to give, that exists. That's what it is. That's where it comes from. It's the capacity. And that's why, by the way, this idea of evil and of Amalek and remembering to eradicate it is something that even many Hasidic Sfarim talk about is within each one of us. Because sometimes we make choices to give or to take. We make choices between bringing light or, unfortunately, sometimes maybe not. So by observing Purim, we have the opportunity to remind ourselves of where evil comes from, of what it is and what it looks like. So now that we know where it comes from, we can consider what we can do about it. So the first thing is exactly this, to confront it, to talk about it, to acknowledge that it exists. Because if we pretend that this doesn't exist out there, A, it could run rampant and rear its ugly head in many different ways. And B, I think that sometimes it prevents people from being able to heal. Because people who were the victims of evil, whether, you know, I was reading recently, it's such a powerful book, I have to highly recommend it, the book called The Choice by Dr. Edith Eger, tremendous book about her experience as a survivor and then as a therapist. She's talking about, and then she has another book, which I also read recently, published a few months ago, called The Gift. The first one was called The Choice, the second one was called The Gift. You know, God forbid, she writes there about people who are out there in the world who suffer terrible evil. You know, I grew up, thank God, in a wonderful, loving, supportive home. There are children who she's working with as her patients as adults who are victims of abuse. Physical abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, Rahmanul Itzlan. When I read this, it's so disturbing. So to tell a person who is a victim of evil that was brought on them is that, no, evil doesn't really exist. To not be able to understand that and validate it, I think could be very damaging. So the first thing that Judaism tells us about evil is that we need to say that it exists. We need to call it out. And those people who were affected by Amalek, they were not the cause of it. They were the victims. It doesn't mean they should be living their life just defined by that, but just recognizing that there is the power for people to take and abuse others. That's number one. Number two is that when we remember Amalek, when we remember that there is evil, we're also called upon to eradicate it. Timcha ezecher Amalek. We have to confront it. And that part of confronting evil is being, I would even say, aggressive, not just assertive. When there is the potential for darkness, for people grabbing and abusing and hurting others, you can't just sit by. You have to wage war. It's interesting that the first war that the Jewish people waged, this ragtag band of freed slaves out of Egypt, their first confrontation was a military confrontation with Amalek. Because they had to understand that even before they got to Sinai to create a covenant with God, they had to understand that you must stand up to evil. And you have to confront it even sometimes in a military manner. We have to be militant about destroying evil. Now, there are a lot of caveats of that, and that needs to be done with caution. But we need to be active in eradicating evil. Not just talking about it, but taking practical steps to remove it. But then there's the third, and this is where Purim is so beautiful, and it's so powerful. Because if Purim is remembering that there is evil, then the rabbis gave us an amazing pathway to navigate a world that has evil. And you know what that is? A world of giving, of love. Before Purim, we stand up in the synagogue and we say, we know that there's evil out there and there are people who want to destroy us and who want to bring darkness into the world, where our job is to bring light. So you know what we're going to do? we're going to just be happy. After, it's true, it is true that in the times of Shushan, they had a military battle. They fought in the streets against anti-Semites who were coming to kill them. That was the first day. But after that, you know what the sages said? We're just going to have a day where people can give to each other. The antithesis of taking, of evil, is giving. So what do we do on Purim? We read the story, and we celebrate with a meal, and then we have two specific commandments, which are distinct from any other time during the year. Anybody know what are the two rabbinic commandments, the two mitzvot that we do on Purim, besides from hearing the story, and besides from having a festive meal with some wine and a nice meal? What is it that we do? There are two other, that, bingo, Mishloach Manot and Matanot Levionim. What are those? Giving, yeah, go ahead. I'm asking, go ahead. That's exactly right. So Mishloach Manos, like you said, doesn't have to be two brachot. It's two foods to another person. Wait a second. Thank God, everybody on this Zoom, on this call, everybody, thank God, has lunch. You know? The Schreibers are not going to wait for me to stop at their house with a little bottle of grape juice and a little challah. So why do we do that? They don't need my grape juice. Why do we do that? Because it's not about what they need. It's about being a giver. It's a habituation that we need to combat evil and the power in the world, the koach of netila, of taking, with giving. That person might not need it. But that's not the point. The point is, am I bringing light into the world as a giver? And this mitzvah, by the way, the commandment of Matonos Levyonim, of giving gifts to the poor, that's separate from the general mitzvah of tzedakah. If God forbid somebody was so poor that all they could give a whole year was $1 to tzedakah, they would still have to give another few cents for Matonos Levyonim, for gifts to the poor on Purim. Because Purim is the day that we confront evil, and we confront evil with goodness. We confront evil with giving and with love. That's the light of the world. That goes back to why God created us in the first place, so that we could give light into the world. He created a vacuum, which was, of course, dangerous. By creating that vacuum, it left us choice, it left broken vessels, it left the potential for darkness, and there are people who have chosen darkness, and that's their choice. That was their choice. That's part of God creating the world with free will. But that means that we have the choice to bring the light, to give. So Purim is all about giving on a practical level. It's exactly the opposite of what Haman was representing. So if we think about it in terms of our own practical lives, we can realize that when we make choices, we have the capacity to channel the energy of the creation of the world. That giving, when we do that, it means we're going back to the same energy with which God created all of existence. It's the koach, it's the power of nesina, of the nosing, of giving. Maybe that's why there's a connection. We could talk more a different time about Purim and Yom Kippur. Yom HaKippurim, Purim and Yom Kippur, because it's all about giving. On Yom Kippur, we say that God, you give out your hand to give us another chance. You give us a new life. Yom Kippur and Purim, they're all about giving in different ways. But so much of Judaism comes back to exactly this point. That the power of evil, which exists to take, can be outshone by our capacity for goodness, for giving. And that is a major theme of Purim. Purim is about giving. If you think about it, it's very different, perhaps you could say, and I don't know so much about other holidays of different other religions, but We don't send children out on Purim with baskets to go collecting treats. We send children or ourselves delivering treats. We're giving. It's a focus on the other. Right? What is it going to be? That's why the Talmud tells interesting stories about what people chose for Mishloach Manos based on the kind of foods and what would be, you know, delicious and delivery. It's all about focusing on what can we give to that person. And I think even though it's not the permanent answer in the short term, because God says that as long as this world exists, there is always the potential for evil. There is always the potential for people to choose darkness and taking and selfishness. But of course, ultimately, you know, Haman tried to hang Mordechai on a tree. How high was that tree? Anybody know how many amos, how many cubits tall was it? How tall was it? It was 50, that's right, 50, but he did not succeed. He did not succeed. Because the number 50, which of course represents wholeness in the Jewish tradition, that's why when the Torah actually refers to eternity, la'olam, it refers to the number 50, 50 years. The Jubilee, the 50 years. Haman could not succeed to reach the 50th. He couldn't. He couldn't hang Mordechai on the 50th. Because only goodness can reach the 50th. Ultimately, God says, Amalek and taking and evil and darkness will be eradicated. Right now, it's not yet. And that's why God says that his presence in the world is not 100% fixed yet. It's not only light. We still have a struggle between light and darkness. But don't worry. One day, God says, it'll only be light. That's why the 50, that Haman couldn't reach. Only the Jewish people in the covenant reached Sinai and bringing light into the world 50 days after they left Egypt. Because that ultimately brought us that original light. That's perhaps why when we got to Sinai, the Talmud has a tradition that we went back to Adam before he ate, before he took. Because it's all about bringing that light into the world. So God gave us creation and he gave us revelation. And we have the opportunity in turn to give more, to create that light through giving. So don't worry. Even though there is an ongoing struggle with evil, God promises us that ultimately the light of giving will triumph. Ultimately, even if we don't see it in our day, hopefully in our children's day, if not in our children's day, then their children, ultimately that evil will be removed from the world. We will get to that state of, like you said before, tikkun olam, meaning the ultimate light. It'll all be about light and about giving. And maybe that's why, and we'll conclude with this, Maimonides has an interesting teaching, that even though when the Messiah comes and the world transitions to this ultimate new phase, all the other holidays will be eclipsed by the redemption, but not Purim. Because Purim is the holiday of pure giving. And that pure giving is the giving of eternity. It's the energy of light that came into the existence of the world when God said, let there be light, let there be a world. And that is the ultimate triumph. It's the triumph of giving over taking. It's the triumph of love over hate. That's the triumph of Or, of light. La'yehudim, what does it say the Jews had? Ora, they had light. That's the ultimate triumph. Yes, there's a struggle between light and dark in this world. There is evil, and we need to combat it, but we need to remember not to lose hope that we can bring more light into the world, and ultimately, the light will triumph. Haman can never hang us on the 50th. The 50th will always be for us, for the light, for the good. And that's what God promises us, and therefore Purim will never cease. The reflection of the vanquishing of the darkness by light, that will exist forever. So obviously, in the work that you do in teaching about light and combating darkness is very important in terms of giving people the tools to give to others, the tools to be able to recognize when we're taking and when we're giving. Sometimes it's subtle. The Talmud has a tradition that sometimes when we when it looks like we're taking, we're actually giving. Dr. Eger gives a story in her book where she talks about how her daughter was in college, and her daughter was a very active young woman. It was very, she had a very particular, I would say she was coming from a college, a hotbed of liberal activism, you could say. So she says her daughter comes into her room one Saturday morning, and Dr. Eger is there with her husband, these two Holocaust survivors, and she's sitting there in her bed, and her husband is feeding her pieces of papaya. And her daughter is outraged. "Mom, how terrible this is! What are you doing here?" And she says, "This little girl, this teenage college girl, you don't understand anything about life. You don't understand that my husband wants to get up early in the morning. They lived in El Paso, Texas, that he wants to drive over the border to a fruit store where they have the best papaya and bring it home and give it to me on Saturday morning and make me feel like $1 million. So it looks like I'm taking the papaya, but I'm actually giving him an opportunity to be a good husband." So giving and taking is not always what it seems. You have to always get to the shorish of it. But the point is that when we go through life, if we are aware of this, that there is the potential for taking, but there's also the opportunity for giving. Think about the students who come in with your groups and what it means to give to someone else in their class or to someone in their family or someone in their community. When they give, they are giving the light of God into the world. And that every person can do. So in that giving spirit, I'm going to give you all a blessing to have a beautiful Purim, to have a healthy and safe life.